Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and it's a pet behavior day on the show. We'll be talking about the difference between aggression and reactivity in dogs. We'll be taking your questions about dog training and behavior with our good friend George Malera. He's here and happy to help. He's a professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine in Madison. George has trained dogs for more than 20 years, and he's been a pet behavior counselor. He also volunteers his time and skill with other not-for-profit organizations and rescue groups. At 12:30, we'll talk about training your cat, but first we zero in on your dog. What makes your dog react negatively? Tell us what you do to calm the situation. And let us know what other pet behavior or training questions you might have. Give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. George Malera, welcome back. Good
Larry,
to have you.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We wanted to start by talking about aggression and reactivity in dogs. What's the difference between those two?
You know, there's a lot of people that sort of get the words mixed up, because reactivity is just when a dog, it can be reactive. It can be happy reactive and just jumping and barking when they're excited to see a person, when they're excited to see a dog. And then there's also reactivity that's prey driven. So you have dogs that are reactive towards bunnies and squirrels, maybe cats. And then when we talk about aggression, aggression is falls into the same categories. There can be fear aggression, fear of strangers, fear of novel things. And that is when a dog could potentially have a bite. So we talk about bite scales, right?
Yeah.
A dog isn't just necessarily going to run up to somebody and bite them, but provoked enough, they could potentially bite.
Okay. Well, let's say if your dog's barking and pulling on the leash, how do you know the difference between it being aggressive or reactive?
For example, when people call me and they say that their dog is aggressive, right? I take them through a little detail. I get a little detailed history. And I say, well, tell me about your dog. And they say, well, he, you know, barks and lunges on leash. I think he's going to attack a dog. And I say, well, does your dog have any dog friends? And they say, oh, yes. He goes to the dog park and he goes to doggy daycare. And right there, I know it's not aggression. And a lot of times the frustration that they're seeing comes from being pent up. They're frustrated that they can't, they're throwing somewhat of a tantrum because they can't go say hi to the dog because they're on leash in a neighborhood. So there's things that we can do to decipher what it has more to do with how the dog is behaving in that moment rather than so same history I take and I say, well, does your dog have any dog friends? Does he go to the dog park? And they go, oh, no, he would put holes in another dog. Then I know that it's actually aggression and not necessarily frustration.
Yeah, and that's the tough one.
Right.
to deal with. Fear is a common reaction, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have lack of socialization plays a huge role. And I heard it explained to me once in a really, really wonderful way. Imagine if you have two different female dogs that are pregnant. You have the golden retriever at the breeder's house in a beautiful whelping box, and there's all the food and warmth and love and caring. There's not a lot of cortisol in that dog's life. So chances are the puppies are going to come out cool, calm, and collected. Similarly to what we say to pregnant mothers. Don't be stressed out. It's going to go into the baby, right? You're going to stay calm and relaxed, right? So when we talk about these moments where, so then you have this other dog who's a pregnant mom on the street fighting for food, looking for a den to call her own, and she's just constantly stressed out. When those puppies are born, if they make it into rescue, those puppies can be a little wonky emotionally, right? They're not going to have all the love and nurturing and care they could be. And I sort of put it in the category of like human babies that are born addicted to a substance or, you know, the children come out a little bit not right because of what happened in utero.
So let's look at body language in a dog. What are some of the body language cues that indicate your dog's emotions are shifting, let's say?
So this is a huge topic because a lot of times as humans, we can identify the big aggression. We can identify the big behavior. So you approach a dog and they give you that low guttural growl or they air snap, or they bare their teeth, right? We can identify those. But there's all these little subtle things that occur prior to that that we miss because we're not trained to see them. So lip licking. There's this one really distinct lip lick that dogs do when they're stressed. And it's a little lip lick that comes right to the front of their nose. And it's just like a quick little tongue flick, almost like a snake. That can be a sign. But it's also the lip lick with other things attached to it. So the ears might be pasted back to their head. They might be low and cowering. Their head might be low and cocked to the side. These are all signs of a dog being fearful of something. Tail tucked. That's another one that we're pretty well versed with, is the tail being tucked almost up to the belly. These are all signs of a dog being fearful. And one big misconception, and I just did a really nice bite prevention clinic with the kids over at Dane County Humane. And I talk about, you know, people say, oh, when a dog approaches you, let them sniff your hand. And I've grown quite attached to my fingers. Right? So when a dog approaches, I always tell people, you know how a dog will let you know if they want to be pet? They'll come up to you. And they'll show you the pro-social behaviors of wagging their body and leaning into you and all those nice behaviors. But if a dog is slinking away and keeping their distance, they might not want to be touched. And by approaching them, even though it's not done with you know, intentional provocation, it can put the dog in the situation where they want to bite or create distance because they're scared.
Chelsea in Madison has a question that relates to this, I believe. Let's get her on and find out. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi, Chelsea.
Hi, Dad.
What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, so my question is, I'm a dog mom, as in my dogs are my kids. And I think just like kids, dogs have personalities that, no matter how much training or discipline or whatever, there are some things about them that's just their personality. Now, am I on the right track, or am I just a lazy dog mom that isn't putting in enough work into doing some training? Because there are some characteristics of my two dogs who were both adopted, by the way, around ages like 2 to 5. But there are just some things about my dogs where it's like, you know, I don't think that these things are ever going to change. And I think I'm just going to accept these parts of my dogs and just work with them rather than like work against them.
You know, there's a lot to be said about what you just explained, because there are some cases where the behavioral issues are so apparent and they've been rehearsed for so long that it is hard to change. So if you have an 8-year-old dog that has been resource guarding for 7 years, that's going to be a lot harder to modify and change than a puppy that's resource guarding, because they haven't had a lot of time to practice it. But I do appreciate what you said about, you know, your dogs being who they are at a certain age. Now, I don't know how much training you've done with your pups or how much you've tried to modify their behavior, but there's always hope in modifying behavior, or at least changing it a little bit, even though they've been rehearsing it for quite some time. So when it comes, depending on the behaviors you're describing, like if a dog is reactive, I've had a lot of success changing a dog's behavior to the point where they're not barking and lunging on the leash anymore, but I wouldn't trust that dog to just go up to any dog and greet them. So we can make things better through behavior modification, but it's not going to, you know, make everything perfect.
Chelsea, does that help?
It does. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a great day.
Thanks so much for calling. And it is important for your dog to learn emotional control. And that's something you need to work with.
Absolutely. And I also like what Chelsea said. It's like, you know, if you have a dog that's a little bit fearful or cautious around people, and it takes them a little while to make friends with dogs or people, that's okay. And what people want to do is they want to push for something that they people have too high expectations of their dogs and not high enough expectations of themselves. And they want their dog to be perfect, but they sometimes don't put in the effort, or the dog might just not, some behaviors are not modifiable.
Yeah. And you get an older dog. Somebody's asking here, is it possible to socialize an older dog who's anxious?
And again, it really depends on the severity of the anxiety. And, you know, and with an older dog, I'm very big on bringing pharmaceuticals on board, you know, helping dogs feel better chemically so that they can perform better in real life situations. You know, there's so many times that we reach for a variety of things. It could be a pharmaceutical, it could be some other substance, or it could be food, right, to help us feel better. But people are like, oh, I don't want to put my dogs on medicine. Why not? Medicines work. So we have to have an open mind if we really want our dog's behavior to change, to have that open mind to sort of instill other things, that not just the training protocol and the behavior modification. You have to put the training wheels on the bike to help the dog along.
Yeah. And what are some ways you can help your dog? Let's say they're not on medications, and but you're out with the dog and it becomes reactive in some fashion. What do you do in those circumstances?
Well, a couple of different approaches. Number one is I talk about the 72-hour period, where there's something called trigger stacking. And that's when a lot of things are happening that are stimulating the dog. And it could very well be like you go to the dog park and your dog has a nice time. And then you're walking down the street and there's a bunny and a squirrel and the dog chases the bunny and the squirrel. And then later that day, you have your brother or sister visit with your niece and nephew. And the niece and nephew goes to hug the kid. The dog nips at him. All of that high energy emotion sticks with the dog and it doesn't go away. And I always ask people, what's happened the previous 3 days? Because that can really dictate how the dog behaves in certain situations. And that trigger stacking it sticks to the dog like smoke on wet clothes. It can really carry over the next few days. The other big thing I talk about when it comes to how a dog behaves is if the dog is left to make good choices. So the training that I do is clicker training or shaping. When we use clicker training and shaping, we allow the dog to make choices. And in making those choices, they start to develop confidence. Because they are, so if there's a scary stranger approaching them, they know that if they sit or lie down, that's their way of saying, like, I'm not really enjoying this opportunity to meet somebody. So if we give them better tools and different behaviors to draw from, then they're able to perform better in real life and they start to feel safer, and that just continues to snowball in a good way.
Teo in Madison has something that relates to this, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Teo.
Hey, how's it going, Larry? Thank you so much for having me. Awesome show.
Thank you.
Hi, Teo.
Hey, I guess something I've noticed as a dog dad over the years, walking my dog in the neighborhood, you know, throughout the city, I've noticed this more often. A lot of other dog walkers walking in this opposite direction towards you. Always, I mean, now it's like 90% of the time I've found that they walk to the other side of the street. You know, it's like hide the dog from the other dogs. Is that going in the wrong direction for newer dog owners? Is that going to kind of make dogs as a whole in the community, you know, more aggressive or something of that nature?
You know, I always talk about dogs meeting on leash. I think there's always a potential for an argument, because the two dogs that are approaching on leash, there's a lot of sustained eye contact. They're making a straight line. And then when they meet, depending on each of the dog's personalities, one might be really rambunctious. I call them close talkers with too much cologne. And they come in a little bit hot to greet the other dog. And then there's an argument because the other dog didn't like that dog's energy. I think crossing the street is a good management tool if you have a reactive dog, because when you're working any sort of behavior modification, you should be working sub-threshold. You should never see the aggression. You should never see the reactivity, because you want to work them where they're able to work. Now, when we talk about crossing the street, it's a good management tool if your dog will react from a certain distance. But as you're doing behavior modification training and moving in along in your training, you can start to push the envelope a little bit by, crossing the street later and later and exposing your dog to closer proximity. But it's all done very gradually. We wouldn't, you know, ABCs and 1-2-3s before trigonometry.
Yeah, there you go. Teo, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. George Malera, our guest today. Professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Glad to have you with us today. You know, we're listener supported and we have a 1-day member drive coming up next week, but you could help right now. As a matter of fact, you could be one of 600 people to donate before March 6th. And if you do it, a generous group of members will give an additional $10,000 for WPR programs. That's when we get 600 people donating. So you could join in right now. You could do it at WPR.org/donate. WPR.org/donate. Right now, we're taking a look at your dog's behavior with our guest, George Malera, professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine in Madison. And you can join in. Number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. And let's take a call from Lynn in Madison. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. We've adopted a Pyrenees mix, retriever mix. We got her at about 7 months old. She's about 10 months now. She's wonderful, well-behaved, food-motivated, all of that. We take her to the dog park every morning, and she goes in gentle and loving and just wants to run. And as dogs come, they escalate their behavior, and she escalates with them. She meets their behavior. And occasionally there's that, well, poorly behaved dog that gets aggressive and rough. And she tries to, she's still so young, she tries to meet that behavior, and we don't want her to. So I was wondering if that's our problem, and we have to figure out how to break it up before it gets to that place, or will she learn that that's just not the kind of play she wants to do, and she'll walk away and find some other dog to play with?
Great question, and thank you for calling. So one of the things that I talk to people about dog parks is that dog parks, and I'm totally stealing this from a brilliant trainer named Trish King. She says, dog parks are like a cocktail party where everybody's drunk. You can either go and have a great time or go and have a bad time. And it's you know, these public dog parks, everybody's welcome, so long as they're bringing, you know, no aggressive dogs and whatever. But what happens is the key word here is arousal. And the dogs going into the dog park are aroused because they're going into the dog park. The dogs leaving the dog park are aroused because they just were at the dog park. And when there's all these little introductions happening within the dog park, you have dogs that, you know, are a little bit more rambunctious, a little younger, a little bit more in your face, as I said before, close talker with too much cologne. Now, the biggest issue here is we don't want your dog learning that the best defense is a good offense. So we want to make sure that that her experiences at the park are always somewhat nice, you know, for the most part. So if you start to notice her meeting dog's energy, or there's been a couple of instances where, you know, a dog got rambunctious and she had to sort of correct the younger dog, or whatever it might look like, I would probably say shorten your time at the dog park and keep moving. There's a fluidity that's so important at the dog park where if you just, you got to keep moving, because that other dog won't stay with you for long. They'll go back to their owner, and it'll help keep your dog safe from having to correct other dogs. The other nice thing you can do is just invite a friend. So if your dog has a dog friend, going to the dog park together can sort of isolate them to play together and walk together, as opposed to just constantly meeting the new dogs. But keep on swimming.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're, and Lynn's probably could even identify some of the dogs based on previous experience.
Right. Yeah, and you can avoid those dogs altogether. We're not talking a police lineup, but, you know, as you're walking along, you're like, ooh, that dog can be really, like, in my dog's face. I'm going to give that dog a wider berth.
Yeah. Lynn, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Rick in Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great show. I just wanted to make one observation about nature versus nurture, and this has been a great show on how to modify behaviors. But I just want to point out that there was a study done in Russia over decades where a researcher took foxes and essentially kept breeding them and to get more compliant and human-friendly foxes, and she succeeded. It was kind of a study like the evolution of wolves into dogs. But one of the things she tried was she took some of the aggressive dogs' embryo, or I believe they were embryos, and placed them into the very biddable foxes, the nice foxes. And what she found out is when they gave birth, they were still, you know, human aggressive foxes. So there is a certain component. People tend to think you can get a rescue dog and just by modifying its behavior, it will always work. And that just isn't really the case, which doesn't mean you shouldn't try, but they do have certain innate tendencies that can be difficult sometimes to overcome.
Yeah.
That's just my comment.
And I know the study you're talking about. They were breeding. I don't know what they were actually the study was for, but they couldn't get near the fox, so they just took the friendliest foxes and they started breeding for tameness. Now, the cool thing that you're talking about, the other side of the subject here, is what you started to see in these black fox were coat changes. And so we're breeding for tameness, and then we started seeing, like, they started seeing coat changes, ear flopping, more like what I call Peter Pan dogs, where they were just like playing more and just much. And this happened within 3 or 4 generations. But yeah, that was a really cool study that they did.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Well, so genetics.
Genetics plays a huge role. You know, are you a product of your environment or are you a product of genetics? It's always both.
Yeah, it's always both. Rick, thank you very much for calling. Claire and Baraboo, your turn. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. I have a 6-year-old pre-owned corgi. I got him when he was about 2.5. He will not let me or anybody else pick him up. For example, to put him up on the vet exam table or to get him up on the couch if I want him to lie next to me. He gets very hissy, and he bites.
Yeah.
Is there anything I can do about that?
Yes. So you said kissy, and that's an interesting thing that you said. So a lot of times people look at licking or kissing from a dog as a pro-social behavior. They're saying, oh, he's licking me. This is so sweet and so kind. But there are different licks. So the lick that you're seeing is like more of a tongue flick, and it's like a push away, like get away from me, get away from me. Because he doesn't want to be held. And these are the precursors to the nipping and or biting. So whenever there's a dog that we have to desensitize to being picked up or handled or anything that revolves around husbandry, I always break it down into its smallest components. So what I would start off with the dog on the floor and I would say, pick up. I'd bend over and just place my hands on the rib cage and then say yes and then give him a treat. And you do that a couple of hundred times, and then you start to gently lift and give a treat. It also helps if you have a partner to feed the dog while you're touching them. But little by little, you start to desensitize them. And the analogy I always use is if you imagine if I said, I'm going to pinch you, Larry, I'm going to pinch you in the arm really hard, but I'm going to give you a $50 bill. Larry would eventually turn around and say, George, this arm's getting raw. Could we switch to the other arm? Right. Even though it's something uncomfortable, I call it, you know, the golden handcuffs of a job, right? We stay at certain positions and jobs because the money's really great. The health insurance is great. We can change the dog's perspective of being handled through using food because we change how they feel about it. And that's the direction to head. And then the moment you start to see him sort of lick or even just like bare teeth, you back off. You don't force the topic because if you force it, he's going to be left to only bite. So you want to work slowly and patiently with your pup.
Sort of on the opposite end, Julie and Eau Claire emailed us. Julie's newish puppy, Peppa, the puggo, seems to think Julie is her litter mate, always seems to think she needs to be on top of Julie, and then last night started nipping when people walk by. This isn't something she did previously, but she gets comfy in her new home. Her bravery keeps going up. They've had her since November.
Yeah, and this is something we've talked about before on the show, which is called the decompression phase, right? We get these dogs. They've been under extreme stress coming up from transport. They're living in a foster home. They're getting used to new environments, and then they get adopted. There's always this sort of time, and we use the three rule, 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months. 3 days for the dog to sort of settle in a little bit, and that number can change based on the dog and their personality. But 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months, and over that time, the dog starts to sort of go, oh, I'm home now. This is my human, and this is my couch, and this is my... And they can become possessive. What she's talking about is resource guarding. But resource guarding, we often think about as possessive of food or a bone or a chewy. But resource guarding can have many different sides to it. And one of them, they can guard locations, but they can also guard a specific human. Now, the exercise to do here is that anybody who's walking past you is gonna throw a treat to her as they're passing. So that we start to teach her that people approaching is a good thing. Because the flip side to this is when people lean on punishment, so that same dog is sitting there and she air snaps or nips at somebody when they're passing by or coming to sit down next to Julie, was her name?
Julie. Yeah.
So they come sit down next to Julie and the dog is nipping at the person. Our intention is to reprimand. Hey, no, we don't do that here. No, we don't do that. And the dog's like, wow, I thought I didn't like people coming near you, but you also don't like it when people come near you. I got to try harder.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make sure that we're communicating the right information to our dogs by saying, no, when people come close, you get chicken, cheese, turkey, and hot dogs. Oh, please come sit down. Right. We can change how they feel about certain things using food and positive reinforcement. But to punish something like that would be detrimental. Similarly with other types of resource guarding. So I give, you know, I adopt a dog and I give it this delicious bone to chew on because I love it. And then I go to take the bone away and the dog growls at me. I take it personally. I say, hey, I bought you that bone. I adopted you. And this is the thanks I get. Right. That old adage, don't bite the hand that feeds you. So I reprimand the dog. I yell at it. Maybe I give him a smack or something. And the dog goes, whoa, definitely don't growl. He doesn't like it when I growl. I'll just bite. And that's when I get the call. My dog bit me out of the blue. And I go, no, they didn't. They all come pre-programmed with growling and baring teeth and all these warning signs. And I like my smoke detectors with batteries in them.
Oh, Christy in La Crosse. Let's go to you now. Hi, Christy.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I have a 16-year-old mini dachshund. She's wonderful. And she has been reactive on walks, mainly because she's had a husky roller and a boxer broke loose. But, you know, the last 4 years, she got really comfortable again on lead. However, she's almost totally blind. And so I'm wondering how it's best to help her with reactivity on a walk when she really can't see where we're going.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when we're dealing with our beloved senior pups, it's more along the lines of just making sure she's safe. So if you live in a neighborhood where there's sometimes dogs at large, I would definitely recommend carrying a big golf umbrella. Now, the umbrella is not to sort of swat the other dog away or anything, but it's to open it to act like a shield so you can bend down and pick up your dog and you'll be able to maintain that umbrella as a shield from the other dog until that dog either goes away or the other owner is able to retrieve their dog. You know, there's, because she's almost blind, you know, the job one would be just to make sure she's safe and you pick her up, but you never want to pick her up if you don't have something blocking you, because that other dog could jump up and start to nip and bite her out of your arms. So we want to make sure that you have some sort of barrier. The other thing I recommend doing is throwing treats at the other dog. So picking up your dog and then throwing a big handful of treats at the dog can sort of disrupt what they were thinking of, look for food, and it gives you the opportunity to exit.
Yeah. Yep. All good tips. But, Christy, good luck.
But that's tough having a senior dog.
Yeah.
You know, 16's a nice old age.
Yeah, it sure is. Christy, and good luck with your dog, and thank you for calling. Philomena in La Crosse has something. Let's go there. Hi, Philomena.
Hello.
Hi, Philomena.
I live in a rural area, and I'm just wondering what the best way is to react when you're out for a walk by yourself and you are approached by a very menacing dog.
Okay.
You know, a lot of snarling and growling and things like that. And then I've got a second part to the question. Would it be harmful to a dog like that to perhaps spray them with a vinegar water solution just to get them to understand that you're a problem if they approach?
Yeah, there's actually a better product on the market. It's called Direct Stop. A lot of people sometimes will carry pepper spray or something that's like, you know, that's really going to irritate the dog. But the problem with those types of products is that there's the risk of blowback. You spray the dog and then you get it in your eyes. You can't see. And then it's just a big mess. This product, Direct Stop, is a citronella-based spray, and it sprays a good long distance, and it really just disrupts the dog. And it literally smells like a citronella candle. And it can disrupt the dog and buy you enough time to sort of get out of that situation. And then making sure that, you know, you have other options. You know, when I'm working with smaller dogs, I've been in situations where, you know, you pick up that dog and you put him in the back of a pickup truck or in a recycle bin, anywhere that's going to be safer than being out with a dog that is menacing.
Phil, and what's the name of that product again?
It's called Direct Stop.
Direct Stop.
Yep.
Good thing to have on
Absolutely.
Hand.
Absolutely. And it's very, very safe and effective.
Philomena, thank you for calling. Let's go to Nancy in Two Rivers. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have a Border Collie Australian Shepherd mix, and she is just a wonderful dog. But there are times when she's barking, and I see nobody around. And all of a sudden, like across the street behind a fence, I see a person with a dog walking. And I'm just wondering, is this, does she smell the dog? Does she hear the dog? I mean, she can even be in the house and I'm looking around. And obviously she can't see the dog. So I'm wondering if you have insight.
Absolutely to all the above. They can see, hear, and smell. So depending on which way the wind's blowing, and if this is a dog that's behind a yard, there are chances that you've walked that path before and she's seen that dog prior. And sometimes dogs will like look and see if the dog's out there and possibly bark preemptively, just saying, I see you back there. So yes to all of those things. Now, one of the things that you can do, and this is part of the treatment protocol, and there's a lot more to it, but this is sort of like the Cliff Notes version. When you're walking with a dog and they start to bark, number one, I trust my dogs because they can, you know, dogs can hear very, very well and smell very well and see very well. Now, when it comes time, you wait until they see the other dog. A lot of times people use food as a distraction, but they learn very quickly that, oh, anytime my mom pulls out food and she tries to distract me with food, there's a dog over there. They start to put those two things together. And so that's why I like to wait until my dog sees another dog and then I feed. Because in that case, they're getting fed because that other dog exists.
Okay.
It's very interesting. It'd be similar. So if Larry and I worked here at WPR together and Larry didn't like me, right? I heat up my fish in the microwave and, you know, I don't do my work. And so Larry really doesn't like me. He wants to punch me in the nose and, you know, kick me in the butt. But if I told Larry, right, if somebody cast a magic spell on Larry and said, okay, every time you see George, you're going to get the most violent heartburn you've ever had in your life. Is that going to make things better or worse? Probably worse.
Worse.
But now we take away that magic spell and I cast a spell on Larry that says every time you see George in the office, you're going to feel a warm pop in your pocket and there'll be a $100 bill. Where the heck is George? even though he doesn't like me, he's going to feel better about me. So we want to pair the stimulus, in this case, a dog, with something super, super yummy. And it doesn't take them long to see the dog and then look back at you and say, hey, there's another one. Pay up.
Nancy, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Well, let's take another call. But by the way, an open line or two, we can get you on pretty quickly. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Vicki in Mount Horeb. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. I have a question about a reactive dog. I mean, she's a wonderful dog in all ways, but very leash reactive. We got her as a rescue when she was about a year old it was through a rescue group in this area, but she came from a puppy mill situation, Amish situation out of, I think it was Missouri or Kansas. And they said that she was being attacked by bigger dogs or she was afraid of them. I thought, okay, that's fine. And she's great. But she is so reactive when on leash to all little creatures, whether it's cat or squirrel or dog or goats. She goes crazy over those. And we've worked and worked with her, and it's much better. I have it to the point where when another dog is coming on the bike trail, she'll sit and watch. But if she can't meet the dog, she goes crazy as they walk by. And, you know, I treat, but she just, she'll twirl and bark and jump and acts like she's going to attack. In reality, she loves other dogs. When she's not on leash, she gets along great with all of our other family dogs. She goes to a kennel, you know, on occasion when we are gone, and she's just great.
Yeah. And what you're
describing?
Yeah, what you're describing here is called barrier frustration. She's on leash, and what kind of dog is she?
She's a Sheltie.
So what was the Sheltie bred for?
Herding.
Right. So when she sees a dog moving, she's like, "I didn't authorize this movement. Who said you could walk down the block over here?" Right. So she's getting herself worked up. Now there's two parts to this answer. The first part is, what kind of treats are you using?
I use a variety.
Okay.
I mean, when I need the really good treats, I use chicken or ham or
Beautiful.
Something like
Excellent.
That. And other times I use the more, you know, I bought the dried salmon or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. So when you're working, you know, let the punishment fit the crime and let the payment fit the behavior, right? So we want to make sure that she is getting paid the best you have. So when you're out for a walk with her, it should be chicken, cheese, roast beef, hot dogs. You know, spare no expense and be super generous. The other thing I talk about here is arousal training. So one of the parts that's always missing around reactivity is that when a dog is being reactive, whether they're frustrated or aggressive, they are aroused. And when dogs are aroused is when we want them to listen the most, but that's when they're able to listen the least.
Yeah.
And that, what a crux, right? So what we have to do is we incorporate training. So I would have people do a couple of focus games, like leaving treats on the floor for an extended period of time, doing a long down stay, really focused work. And then from there, you take a little break from there and you play tug with them and you get them all lathered up. And then you say, okay, now that you're nuttier than squirrel poop, can you still think? And we bring them back to the focus game. So a dog has to genuinely learn how to go from aroused back to focused and then back to aroused and back to focused. And that will carry out into the street. So when you're walking and she sees a dog, she'll be able to sort of have better coping mechanisms and know what to do when she's aroused. And that couples with the other training by feeding her every time she sees the dog. Now, there is one other component here, and that's food refusal. So how do we tell if a dog is learning anything or what's happening in that game? So sometimes you'll offer a delicious bit of hot dog or something, and the dog's like, no, thank you. I'm focusing on this dog. Right there, that dog is over threshold. It would be like me saying to Larry, Larry, what's your favorite food? You could eat 3 square meals a day.
Lobster,
my guy. So imagine you're in the bank doing some banking, and all of a sudden the bank is being robbed, and it's very aggressive and very violent and horrible. And I come out of nowhere with the most beautiful lobster tails. And I go, hey, Larry, you want some lobster? He'd be like, no, I'd like to live. Maybe later. So when a dog refuses food, it's another bit of information that tells us that they're over threshold and you have to create some distance. And what's really fascinating is that sometimes you can just move 20 feet away and then they're able to eat the lobster.
Vicky, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. George Malera, our guest today, professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine in Madison. And we have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Just a little note or two here. At 12:30, we'll get a little insight into a cat's mind, and you'll hear how to train your feline companion. And tomorrow on the show, we talk about how biodigesters are used on a Wisconsin farm, and we'll hear about the career of a Wisconsin forest ranger, a ranger who's written a book about his career, and it's a dandy book. Right now, we are talking about your dog's behavior and dog training with our guest, George Malera. George is a professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine in Madison. And if you'd like to join in, we'll get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. And, George, we have an email from Bob. Is there anything that can be done about neighbors who don't train their dogs and think that everything their dog does is cute, like chase delivery vehicles or bark at other dogs or bark in the middle of the night or jump up on people? These dogs also poop on other people's lawns regularly.
Yikes.
The neighbor is aware of this, so Bob's not sure a conversation will help.
That's not Wisconsin nice, is it, Larry?
No, it is not.
This is more of a civil issue where, you know, if the dogs are sort of causing an unsafe environment by chasing cars, or God forbid, you know, a delivery driver has to swerve and, you know, get into an accident, I would call the non-emergency line. You know, it's not fair for a dog to be barking at all hours of the night, or, you know, defecating on people's lawns where, and they're not picking up. These are all more civil issues, because people that adopt the dogs or have dogs are responsible for their behavior. And if they think it's all cutesy and fun and nice, and it's really not, and, you know, eventually somebody could end up getting hurt, but leaving a paper trail of calling in and sort of just, you know, explaining what a nuisance these dogs are might put a flame there, just to sort of make them think about, you know, controlling their dogs a little better, at least managing their environment a little bit more. But, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. You can't force them to train. You can't force them to do anything with their dogs. Unfortunately, there's no law saying you have to train your dogs.
Jen emailed us, our daughter's beagle mix goes reactive and scary to anyone who approaches her front door. How can she rectify this?
A lot of times when dogs struggle with the doorbell barking or greeting people at the door, and I don't know if this dog is, once the people come in the home, does the dog respond a little bit nicer, or is the dog still fearful and barking? But I do recommend, number one, if you have the ability to, like, disconnect your doorbell, make sure that any visitors that are coming know to, like, shoot you a text or call you before they come up to the door, so that you can either put your dog on leash or be ready with treats, or have your dog in a crate in a different room. So there's a little bit of management going on here. But with a training part here is, let's say Larry and I were roommates and my dog barked at people. I would say, Larry, shoot me a text before you come in. And then you text me and I have my dog on leash and I'm giving him treats as Larry comes in, just to sort of start to alleviate the issue. And it's good to do with people that live in the household, so that the dog is getting a good response, like, oh, it's my other human or my mm-hmm. my human child or whatever. They just to sort of build the foundation of people entering the home is good. Now, if you have a mail slot on your door and not a mailbox, that can pose a problem, because the letter carrier has to put their mail through. Amazon delivery drivers come to the door and bark. And I always ask people, what's happening the other 23 hours of the day? So if the dog is barking and reacting in that moment, a lot of times dogs that aren't crated spend their day on the back of the couch surveying their kingdom, and they bark and bark and bark at the Amazon guy, and the Amazon guy beeps the package and leaves in his truck, and the dog says, "And stay out." So nobody's giving that dog a treat, but that dog is being rewarded for barking. So this might also carry over to when people come to visit. So people come in the door and the dog is getting all worked up. Now, with that said, I said, put the dog on leash, right? Dogs are so clever. So if I am used to putting my dog on leash the moment somebody comes in the door, the leash will be a predictor of somebody coming. So I tell people, put the leash on randomly throughout the day to take away the predictability of putting the dog on leash. Otherwise, you're going to get a conditioned response to the leash, and the dog will start to get worked up and say, so who's coming over? Who's coming over right now?
Okay.
They're clever.
They're clever for sure. Jake in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jake.
Hello. Hey, Jake. I wanted to get your comments on something I see in my neighborhood. There's a lot of people walk around with their dogs, and they have their phone in their face, and big headphones on, completely ignoring their dog. And I know the dog's looking for some signals or trying to communicate or other things. And it just seems like kind of a really obnoxious way to hang out with your dog.
It absolutely is. You know, I remind people, you know, when you know, even when people get home and the dog is jumping on them, remember that they've been home all day. You've had the ability to be social and do all these things. And then you have these people that put on, like you said, the big ear can headphones, and they're disconnected from their dog with their phone in their face, and they're not really spending time with their dog. And unfortunately, that's their prerogative. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, those people have dogs that are a luxury, right? They're not reactive. They're well-behaved and just walking along and sniffing. And, you know, people like yourself and me want to hang out with our dogs. And when we're on a walk, we play with them and we engage with them and we give them treats and we work on a little leash walking and stuff. And, yeah, there's a little bit of they're depriving their dog of a better experience by just being disconnected to them, because we're supposed to be connected to our dogs, especially when we're out and about.
You know, I was thinking about my own neighborhood, and there are a couple of dog owners who are out for a run, and the dog is with them. And every time I see them, I keep hoping that at some point they stop and actually let the dog smell and to just be a dog a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, And we don't know. Like, maybe that dog will get a walk later in the day that's sure. going to allow them, and they're just doing that for exercise. But, yeah, I see that a lot.
Doug in Delta, we'll go to you. Hi, Doug.
Hello. A little bit similar. I'm a biker, and I will see people with their dogs, and some of them do a great job. They're responsible. The dogs either are held when I go by or... they're just well trained, but then there are others who just kind of let them wander. And the thing that frustrates me quite a bit is I'll see people with those retractable leashes, and I don't know which side of them I'm to go on or whatever. So I'd be interested in your comments on that.
Yeah, you know, when I'm out biking or, you know, out for a walk, exercising, I do a lot of rucksacking with my weight vest. And if I see a dog, I'm out exercising. And like you, you're just riding your bike along. I treat every single dog as if it, like, think gun safety. Treat every gun like it's loaded, right? So you have to assume that movement for a lot of dogs can be a problem. And if you're zipping by on a bike or jogging, that can sort of elicit that response to the dog to chase, right? To that predation. So just for safety, number one, if you're cycling, I do recommend having a can of Direct Stop with you, readily accessible, because if a dog is barking, lunging, you can get off your bike, you put your bike between you and the dog, and you have your can of Direct Stop ready, and you sort of just, you know, you're not going to just sit there, but just try to just get past the dog, maybe walk your bike past the dog. But with those retractable leashes, those are the bane of my existence. I think they should all just be in the garbage can. They're dangerous. They can cut people and burn them when the dog takes off running. They're hard to control. They're just not great. So assume that they have 25 feet of leash in there and give them a really wide berth, and just make sure you keep yourself safe when you're cycling.
Yeah. Doug, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call very much. George Malera, our guest today, professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. It's great to have him with us today, and I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us, and the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. We are going to take a minute off here to take a look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the WPR.org, and we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller with George Malera. Great to have you along today on WPR News, talking about training your dog today with George Malera, professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. George has trained dogs for over 20 years. At 12:30, we get a little insight into a cat's mind, and you'll hear how to train your feline companion. But right now, it's dogs and dog training, and our lines are all filled at the moment. So let's go to the phones and to John in Baronet. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hey, John. Good morning, Larry. Hi. Hey, interesting show as always. I've got a German Shepherd. He'll be 8 years old, I think, in June. And I've also got a little black lab mix. I live in town, but it's a tiny, tiny town, 200 and some people. So I don't leash my dogs. I just walk them one block, and then we're out in the country on a gravel road. But I have a neighbor with a pit bull who's usually on a chain, but every once in a while he's not. And when he's not, we walk by, the pit bull comes charging out of their yard and attacks my dogs. And I have stood in the middle of the street and fought this pit bull until its owner would come out and collect it. And my German Shepherd is so, I'm not going to say he's timid, but when he comes across another dog, he'll generally just walk to the other side of the street or ignore it. You know, he's just not afraid of it. He just doesn't care about it. Same thing with people.
But, right. Yeah.
You will fight when cornered.
Yeah, and, you know, even though he would fight, we want to protect our dogs at all costs, you know. And if that's the only road that can get you to where you like to walk your dogs, then I would say, you know, you have to be careful when you're going there. But is there any other path around this house or around this dog? Because, you know, one, it's, again, going back to, like, nuisance dogs in the neighborhood. You know, this is more of a civil issue and, you know, contacting your non-emergency line and making, you know, again, leaving that paper trail and saying, you know, this dog is always out and off leash and, you know, has attacked my dogs, and leaving that paper trail so that, God forbid, something does happen, there's, you know, it's warranted. Like, the consequence for this dog will be warranted. Now, that's why I said, like, you know, just give that dog a wide berth, because it seems like if your dogs are walking off leash, you know, they're probably well behaved and whatnot. So I, again, protect your dogs at all costs and just give that house a very, very wide berth and just stay out of that area.
John, good luck. Thank you for calling. Lori in Kewaunee, your turn now. Hi, Lori.
Yeah, hello. How you doing?
Hi. Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, good. Well, we currently don't have a dog. We had a dog in the past, but my question is, my husband is 68, and he's not, you know, overly mobile. I mean, he wouldn't run around and play with a dog, and I'm 65, and I can walk, but I don't have the energy I used to have. So my question is, what would I look for, and I go to the shelter or go to the Humane Society, what personality traits would I look for in a dog that would be something we could handle?
I absolutely love this question, because what you're talking about is knowing your limitations and knowing that, you know, a puppy would not be the right choice for you. There are several rescues here in the Madison area that do have senior dogs that can sort of, you know, you could adopt. And when I say senior, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a 10-year-old dog. Getting a 3-4-year-old dog that's just, you know, older and a little bit more mature, might even come with some nice training already. There's a lot of different reasons why people have to surrender dogs. But looking at a dog that's like between 4 and 6 years old, still has a lot of life and lots of love to give. And, you know, but a dog that's going to be just a little more mellow. And I wouldn't even discount a dog that's 7 years old, you know, mm-hmm. Like it's finding a dog that's going to be more mellow. The rescue I'm talking about is Albert's Pet Lounge. They actually specialize in senior dogs here in the Madison area, and they would be able to find you a really nice friend to keep you warm on these Wisconsin winters.
Yeah. And somebody who's not wanting to get out and a dog that's not going to want to go 2-3 miles.
Right. Yeah.
On a walk.
A dog that just, you know, that's just a little bit older, you know, that's not going to need that or have that destructive puppy energy. And you're going to have to do all this crate training and all the heavy lifting that you would have to do with a younger dog. There's a plenty of dogs out there that are a little bit older and lovely. Absolutely lovely.
Lori, good luck. Thank you. James in Door County, your turn. Hi, James.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Thanks for calling. Thank you.
Yes, we have an Aussie Doodle, a one-year-old, wonderful dog. A couple of behaviors that probably are easy to correct but are annoying us. I wish I could vacuum our house because I tend not to vacuum. It goes nuts at the vacuum cleaner and attacks it. And we have a cleaning lady, and, of course, we have to apologize constantly because the dog is barking at the vacuum cleaner. When people come to the door and she jumps up on them, that seems to be a simple solution. We don't know what it is. And then when she watches TV with us, every dog or animal on TV, she goes nuts over.
And if they could stop putting doorbells in TV shows, too, that'd be great. So again, you're talking about these breed-specific characteristics, right? We've bred Aussies to control movement. We've bred Aussies to do that, you know, ankle nipping, and you have dogs that alert to movement and things like that. So this isn't completely crazy that your pup is acting this way. How old is your pup?
She's 1 year old.
Yeah, so she's deep in the heart of adolescence, and that's also something. So her brain is still growing. So the one thing I would recommend, and this goes back to what I talked about earlier, is doing some training around focus games where the dog has to sort of focus, long down stays, long sit stays, and then introducing tug of war and play to introduce that arousal. Because in the moments for the vacuum or people coming in the home, it's a very exciting time, and that's when she's going to perform the worst because she's super excited. So the jumping and everything you're seeing. So with the vacuum, the desensitization process that I do is I would have her on leash way across a room, and you just take the vacuum out. You're not going to start it. You're not going to do anything. You just sort of have the vacuum there, and you're giving her treats. And again, you'll know her better than I do, so you'll be able to gauge how far along you can push. Then with the vacuum off, I would just move it back and forth a little bit while feeding treats. And then I would move it around more, building duration on how long I'm moving the vacuum. And then when it's time to finally start the vacuum, I would just turn it on and turn it off immediately so it has that sort of whoosh up and whoosh off, and then see how she does. Until she starts to sort of be quiet and calm, you can turn it on for longer periods. Now, the flip side to that is management. Management is where your cleaning ladies come over, you find a crate in a room that's upstairs and away from all of it, and this way they can clean without being disturbed. And she's not, and your pup is also not rehearsing the behavior of chasing and nipping and barking at the vacuum. Another management tool would just be to get out of the house with her when the cleaning people are there. And that would resolve, it's not going to resolve the issue. It's just going to prevent her from barking and lunging at the vacuum. Now, one little thing, and this is something that happens a lot. It's talking about how treats work. So a lot of times when dogs are jumping at the door and she's being, you know, friendly and sweet and wants to say hello to everybody. So what people tend to do is the dog will jump, jump, jump. And they say, off, off, sit. And they tell the dog to sit. And the dog sits. And they give it a bunch of treats. Well, that dog, if you interview your dog later, you say, hey, Sparky, do you know how to sit? And the dog goes, psh, of course I know how to sit. First, I jump up and I punch you in the stomach. And then I sit. Because the behavior was paired that way. So to prevent the jumping, I would, again, working around that arousal and then having, you know, if you have a loved one coming in the home, you make sure they're coming in and they're not throwing gasoline on the fire. When we get home and we go, who's my schmoopy whoopy puppy, right? That can cause the dog to want to jump even more because you're making them more excited. So making sure that whoever comes in the house is nice and calm, and then you only pet or touch the dog or interact with the dog with food when they're sitting and being quiet and calm. And you can just wait for them to get there, and then you interact with them. What you're looking for, what you're going to see is that they'll start to get calmer faster because they want to have that interaction. But the moment they jump, we cut them off, and we just ignore them and walk away, coming back so that they can try again.
James, there you go. Good advice there from George. Thank you for calling. Dan in Chautauqua will give you a chance. Hi, Dan.
Oh, hi. I'm happy to be here, Larry. Good show.
Thank you.
I love Chautauqua.
Yeah, I've got an Australian Shepherd as well. I've had him for quite a while, and we've had these dogs our whole lives. And he's just a single dog by himself, but he thinks the whole world revolves around him constantly. I mean, like, if I go out, he's outside, I go in the house for a while, I come out, he acts like he hasn't seen me for a year and just gets over-hyper. And when other people come, he thinks that everybody's got to pet him, and he's a nuisance about it. I've tried ignoring it, but I don't know how to handle that, really.
And what are there's something in behavior called an extinction burst. And you've may have heard of this with babies. So you have a baby, and it's time for the baby to sleep in their crib all alone for the night. And it's called the Ferber method, which I'm not a fan of. But what happens is the baby knows to cry at a certain level, and then their caretakers come in, bottle, diaper, snuggles, all the nice things. But when the parents decide that they're going to let this baby cry it out, and I'm doing my air quotes here, they let the baby cry. The baby, nobody's coming in. So what does the baby have to do? Turn it up. So they cry to the next level, and then that's where the parents cave, and they go in. So the baby says, this is my new baseline. And then they have to wait for that next level. So for your dog, it's this idea. Number one, make sure that when greeting him or people coming in, when you ignore him, you truly have to ignore him and just walk past him, just dip and dodge him as he's jumping and trying to get your attention. The moment he disconnects and sort of says, oh, I give up, then you can go say hi to him. But the idea is that to get the attention that they want, they have to sort of be more mellow and chill. And you can also incorporate food into this game, where the moment they get calm, you give them a bunch of treats, and then you sort of say hello to them. But at any point, if he starts to jump and get really aroused and excited, you disconnect again, like a light switch, on and off. And he'll start to realize, like, oh, wow, when I get over-exuberant, they cut me off. If I stay in this realm of calmness, they continue to give me attention, and that's where I want to be.
Dan, thank you so much for calling. Here's an email that kind of relates in a way to this. Sydney emailed us, has a 10-year-old Shih Tzu mutt who has them wrapped around his fingers, quote, he whines constantly and barks for attention. They take him out, give him treats, feed him dinner, play with him, cuddle him, but he is constant and relentless. He wants them to sit next to each other so he can sit with us, and sometimes that makes him stop whining. He just went to the vet with no issues. He also always wakes Sydney's husband up in the middle of the night to go outside, but he really just wants to hunt for rabbit poop, laugh out loud. He won't eat his kibble, or he nudges the food constantly. They give him wet food, and he needs it on a plate. And recently, he can only get him to eat if they feed him with a fork. Julie says she's not kidding. Is there any saving an old dog with an attitude problem?
You know, depending on the age of the dog, does it say how old the dog is there, Larry?
10.
Yeah. So trees are straightened out when they're young. The city plants a tree. They put the little stakes next to it so the tree can go nice and straight. But you go into the wilderness and you see an old crooked oak tree, it's going to be a lot harder to straighten out, if at all, right? So when we talk about these behaviors, it's about really cutting the apron strings and saying, listen, these are the new rules. And we want to do it gently and sweetly so that we're not going to traumatize the pup. But, you know, the one thing is put down his wet food on the plate and, you know, just there it is. And if he doesn't eat after 5-10 minutes, you pick it up. And then you wait till the next meal. And he's going to get treats and stuff throughout the day. But the idea is that, you know, we have to start breaking these habits, especially if you can predict what he really wants. So when he wakes your husband up in the middle of the night to go outside and look for rabbit poop, you know, I would just say no. And just, you know, either take him off the bed or put him in a crate or just tether him to the foot of the bed and just ignore him. The longer a behavior is rehearsed, the harder it is to break. And him being 10 years old, this sounds like it could have been going on for quite some time.
It sure sounds like it. Because he whines constantly.
Right.
And of course, they respond by doing all these things with him.
The extinction burst is high on that dog. It's going to be harder to ignore the behaviors to get him to sort of stop. The demanding.
Mary in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry. We have a Welsh Terrier, and he's a little over 3 years old. We've had him since he was a puppy. And when we got him as a puppy, he loved everybody and every dog. You know, it didn't matter who they were. And there was a lab in the neighborhood that did not like him and would bark at him, and the guy felt bad, but not a big deal. But when he was about a year and a half, we were walking. He was on a leash, and a dog came running out of the house, and a big dog, and brutally attacked him.
Oh, no.
It was awful. He had a puncture wound. You know, we canceled the trip because the dog was hurt. You know, we had called emergency vet. And so now we have to walk by there, but my husband carries pepper spray, but maybe he should get what you were talking about.
The direct stop, yeah.
They keep the dog. We haven't seen the dog since. We've heard it. But if he sees a dog off-leash, he's afraid, and I don't blame him. And so we'll go the other way and have picked him up because he's only like 20, 25 pounds. But if he sees a dog on leash, he will be very reactive to it and bark and sounds like he's going to kill it. It could be three times his size. And that's not a big deal, except we have a neighbor that gets their grand dog. That's a very nice dog, and it sounds really vicious to him. My daughter has a dog, a golden retriever, just like my neighbor does, and they get along and love each other. But how? And you talk about treats. Sonny is not a treat-oriented dog. I mean, he likes them, but only when he wants them. I mean, have treats for all the other dogs, but not he won't take them.
And I would definitely reach for the top shelf treat, you know, like I said before, chicken, cheese, turkey, roast beef, and hot dogs, specifically for those moments when he's being reactive. And like I said before, you're waiting for your dog to see the other dog. That is critical to this training, because if you feed prematurely, the treats cause the dog to appear when you're using it with the food as a distraction. So by waiting for your pup to see the other dog, and then you say, oh, do you see the puppy? What a good dog over there. And we start feeding them. The dog is causing the food to happen. And a lot of times people look at me like I have 12 heads. Like they say, wait, you want me to feed my dog while they're barking? I say, yes, you're not feeding them because they're barking. You're feeding them because the other dog exists. Similar to the analogy I used before, Larry and I work together. Mm-hmm. Larry's getting the $100 because I exist, not because of how he feels. Right? Larry said he wanted to punch me in the nose, right? So the idea is Larry's still getting the money regardless. So when you talk about these moments where there's a big trauma, you know, and it's legitimate, he got attacked by a dog. But in those moments, we can modify behavior, and by using treats in your training, it can be incredibly helpful. And just reach for those top tier treats. A lot of times, you know, the Shriners at the beginning of movies, they say, you know, whoa, donate money to our thing.
Yeah.
We like the money that jingles, but we prefer the money that crinkles, right? We want to make same as WPR, right? Uh-huh. So we want to make sure that we're paying with the right currency so that we can actually change and modify behavior to build those good associations.
Mary, thank you for calling. Carol in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Thank you. I have a 9-month-old black standard poodle, and he is not neutered. He won't be neutered until he is about 13 months. But the problem is when I take him to puppy care, which is where he is now, to play with other dogs, he humps them. And so, yeah, now the other dogs don't want to play with him.
Oh.
So what can we do about that?
You know, it's really about finding the right matches, because right now you're dealing with a very hormonal dog, and humping is not really the end-all be-all of bad behavior. When dogs are playing, humping can be what I call a social deficit. They don't know how to – they're still growing their feelings and understanding how to deal with their big feelings. So humping comes up as a behavior that dogs do, but generally it's derived of play. Is it a doggy daycare that he goes to, or is this like a private house of a friend that sort of just watches after dogs?
It's a doggy daycare.
Yeah. you know, a lot of times they could get away with just pairing him with other dogs his age because they're all cut from the same cloth and they're all silly. So having them match him with other dogs of his age where they're all sort of, again, they're all very similar and simpatico. The other big component here, and I really appreciate that you're waiting to have him neutered because a lot of times, you know, we think about pet population and you know, we want to spay and neuter to prevent, to lower the pet population. But the issue lies in that those sex hormones are not just there to make puppies. They're there to make ligaments and tendons and bone growth and all. And we're seeing all these orthopedic injuries that occur because they're not having the hormones that are needed to build a proper dog. So a lot of the stuff that I would recommend for your pup is just make sure he's around dogs that are similar to him and make sure that when they're playing. So I don't know if you have any friends with younger dogs or if you have that ability. But one of the things that happens during play is that it looks like the COVID spike. The dogs start to play and then it escalates. And because they're getting more and more aroused, they get careless with their mouths, they get careless with their bodies, and they start to slam into each other more. And from there, that's when the argument occurs. So what we want to do is interrupt the play. So right when they start playing, maybe a minute into play, we, in a really happy, happy voice, we say, good dogs, right? And we try to interrupt them just with the voice, and then we give them a bunch of treats, maybe 20 treats in the span of a minute, where we're just really slowing them down with food. And then we say, okay, go play again. They have to ramp back up, but we're getting into this nice ebb and flow of play because we're interrupting them with food and the food will slow them down and the play charges them up. So we're keeping them in this nice ebb and flow of play so they don't get too aroused where they're going to start to hump or start to be more careless with their mouths and potentially get into those little puppy arguments that occur.
Thank you very much for that question. Appreciate your call. And George, we really appreciate you as well.
Thank you. Love being here, Larry.
Thanks so much for being with us today.
Always so stoked to come in. I love being here.
George Malera, professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. He gives some information you can trust. And I think you rely on trusted information when you listen to WPR. And I hope you'll support WPR News so that everyone in Wisconsin has access to high-quality journalism and meaningful conversations. Our one-day member drive starts, it's a one-day drive next week, March 6th. But you can give now for an exciting opportunity. When 600 people donate by March 6th, a group of generous members will donate an extra $10,000. Join in now at WPR.org/donate. WPR.org/donate. Coming up, we'll take a look at your cats and training them next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're switching our attention to cats. Cats, I have a couple of them, by the way, Tiger and Coco, and they have done a great job of getting me to think they're untrainable. But according to our guest, you know, that's not true. And we're going to talk now about cats and trading them with our guest. Emily Ruiz is our guest for the rest of the show. She's the owner and operator of Great and Small Animal Behavior and Training. Emily works with cats and dogs in the Waukesha area. And if you have a question maybe about something your cat does and you can't figure out why, or maybe you have a question about how do I train my cat to do whatever, I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Emily Ruiz, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
How'd you get interested in animal behavior and helping out pet owners?
Oh, man. I mean, I've always loved animals, but I took a course and I went to college at Lawrence University, and there was a pet-assisted therapy class. I was a psychology major, and we started to kind of dip our toe into pet training and training to become therapy animals, and it was all downhill from there.
So you were interested in psychology. I wonder, what has working with animals maybe taught you about life?
Oh, man. I mean, animals just make life brighter, in my personal opinion.
Sure.
Like, having pets has just gotten me through some of the toughest times. And being a psychology major, it taught me a lot about how people learn, how animals learn. And, you know, more often than not, I feel like I'm sort of like a therapist to people and their pets. Or don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm the person's therapist. Sometimes I feel like I'm the pet's therapist. And it's just, they make our lives brighter. But at the same time, you know, depending on what behavioral issues you're facing, they can cause a lot of stress where you forget why you got them in the first place. So that's why I'm here, to help remind us why and to help us all live in harmony.
Yeah. And you provided a broad range of services with great and small animal behavior and training?
Yes. I am a certified professional dog trainer, and I'm also a cat behavior consultant. So I, you know, part of the reasons why I called my business Great and Small is that I will help all animals, great and small, whether you have a Great Dane or a kitten or a rat or, you know, whatever you have. I'm happy and excited to work with them.
Well, we're zeroing in on cats for the next 25 minutes or so. Let's go to Sharon in Fenimore, who has a question about a cat. Hi.
All right. Hi. My problem is my cat will be 2 years old in May, and he bites me. And it's only me. He doesn't bite my husband.
Does he do it, Sharon?
At any given time, I could be walking across the room and he'll jump up and try to bite my thigh, or I could be laying in bed and if my arms are exposed, he'll come up and bite me. If I'm sitting on the couch, the one thing I notice, to pay attention to him, he'll sit in front of me and his ears go back, and I know that's when he's going to attack.
Well, I got to say, I'm really impressed that you're able to anticipate when it's about to happen, because that's half the battle, is being able to read your cat's body language, because they communicate a lot to us. We just aren't always able to pick up on what they're saying. So those ears going back is a red flag of I'm about to pounce. So I'm glad you're able to pick up on that. And for a cat of 2 years old, we're still very much a kitten. We got a lot of kitten predator energy in us, where we like to pounce on things. We like to chase things. And is your cat an only cat, or do you have any other pets?
No, he's an only cat, and he's an indoor-outdoor cat.
Okay. Yeah, so that's actually pretty common, especially when you have a young cat who doesn't have any other litter mates or any other cats to play with. You then become their sole source of energy release and their sole playmate. So what I recommend in those situations is really amping up the playtime, and I actually recommend scheduled playtimes right before they eat, if you can manage it, because cats naturally hunt, especially, you know, an indoor-outdoor cat. They may be used to hunting down their food or hunting for playtime, but instead of hunting down preferably a toy or something like that, they see our hands move, our legs move, and, oh, something's moving, pounce. So if you ever notice those early warning signs, especially, quickly grab a wand toy and redirect that energy. And the good news is your cat is still young, so we haven't had too much time to practice this bad behavior, and you're able to teach instead, hey, I see you've got a lot of pent-up energy. Let's redirect it onto something more appropriate instead of onto my legs, and we can help burn that energy a bit more.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Sharon. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Renee in Sauk City has a question as well. Let's go there. Hi, Renee.
Hi. My cat has been chewing the fur off her belly, and we're thinking it happened started like about a year ago. We had an exchange student, but now she doesn't seem stressed at all, and I feel like She's just doing it out of habit. How can I get her to stop chewing the belly off her fur?
Belly.
Yeah, I have personal experience with that. I had a cat who used to be called that over-grooming, where most often than not, it starts where they're just licking and licking and licking, and then all of a sudden there's a bald patch, but sometimes they do bite and pull out that. And it sounds like it started around when you had an exchange student. Is that right? There was a change in the routine?
I think, yeah, there was a change. We had a new person. They couldn't go in the bedroom they used to be able to go into, and I think that's why it started, but now she doesn't act like she's stressed at all.
Yeah, and that's, I'm glad that you'd mentioned that detail, because this does happen a lot as a result of stress. My cat did it when we moved. It was very common for him. If there was a change in routine, he would start, you know, balding himself a little bit. And cats are notoriously talented at hiding their stress. So the best thing that you can do for him, well, first of all, I always, always, always recommend checking with your vet to make sure there isn't anything else going on, like a skin irritation, because no matter what you do behaviorally, you can't treat a skin infection behaviorally. But assuming everything is cleared medically, I recommend setting up a regular routine, and no matter what things change, you know, your cat will always know, I get my lap time at this time. I get my play time at this time. Just setting up something they can look forward to. But there are also some supplements that you can try. These are not medicines. These are homeopathic, won't hurt, might help type of things. That one of my favorites is Jackson Galaxy's flower essences. It's called Obsession Solution, and it's meant specifically to help your cat calm down and not show obsessive behaviors like that. That grooming, over-grooming is an obsessive compulsive behavior. You just put a drop on their back, you pet it in, and that in combination with setting up a routine and some normalcy should help lower that anxiety a bit and help them to cope a bit more with any change that may be going on.
And I'm betting somebody, there are more than one person saying, what was the name of that stuff again?
It's Jackson Galaxy's Obsession Solution. It's essentially like an essential oil, but specifically formulated for cats.
Now, this cat was chewing off the fur on her belly or licking it off. But you would put this material on her back, or would you put it on the belly?
It's an oil, so it's meant to, you put it on the back and then rub it or brush it in. Some people, you can also put it in their water, things like that. But
okay.
I don't trust that my cat is going to get as regular access to it as if I would have brushed it in. So it's not like a topical treatment. It's more like an essential oil for them to breathe in to help calm them down.
Renee, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Carolyn in Lansing, Iowa, up next. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I have a cat. I found her about a year ago. I think she's about 3 months old. And she's very loving, very sweet. Anywhere I go, she's right with me. But she'll especially in the mornings, she'll lay down next to me and she purrs and she's rubbing her head against my head, and all of a sudden she'll open her mouth and bite. It's not a vicious bite. It's like she's a loving bite, but she has broke skin, and she'll bite like the soft areas of my body, like my face or the inside of my arm. And
ouch.
Yeah. So, and I just love this kitty. She's just wonderful, except for that.
Yeah, that sounds painful.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry you're dealing with that. Yeah, that is something that I also do see a lot, where you're just loving on them and all of a sudden they just turn and bite. And sometimes, just out of curiosity, does it happen pretty quickly or is it sort of a slow, I'm going to come bite you where
slow.
This seems like it's warning? Okay.
It's slow.
I can sometimes hear her mouth open.
Yeah. So there is actually, some people call this petting-induced aggression. More often than not, you see it a little faster, but it is not unheard of to have it be a slow bite. But especially when it's so hard that it draws skin, that's something we definitely want to curb as soon as possible for your safety. And just in general, that's not very pleasant to deal with. So something that I recommend here is really, really, really watching body language and seeing if you can see there are certain really subtle signs that your cat may need a break. Because while your cat may love being pet, they can have a very quick off switch. Sort of like if you see someone being tickled and all of a sudden they're like, okay, now enough. You know, they look like they're having a great time and then very quickly they're done. So you want to look for little signs that they may need a break and keep petting in short bursts. So maybe you pet for a couple of seconds and then you pause, see if your cat leans in for more. But then meanwhile, while you are petting, look to see if you see some subtle body language signals, like I call them fur ripples, or, you know, if their fur kind of twitches a little bit, that's a sign that they're starting to get irritated. If the pupils get really dilated, if the ears start kind of swiveling, a big tell is if that tail starts thrashing. While, you know, we get excited when we see a dog wagging their tail, you do not want to see a cat thrashing their tail around. That tends to be a sign of, okay, I'm getting a little irritated. So look out for those things. Stop right before then and just keep it nice and short and sweet.
Carolyn, good luck, and thank you so much for calling. Emily Ruiz, our guest today, owner and operator of Great and Small Animal Behavior and Trading. She works with cats and dogs in the Waukesha area. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at your cat today, or cats, with our guest Emily Ruiz of Great and Small Animal Behavior and Trading. She works with cats and dogs in the Waukesha area, and we're zeroing in on cats. Cindy in Brooklyn has a question for you, Emily. Let's go there. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question. I have a feral cat that I've domesticated into an indoor-outdoor house cat, and I don't know how to get her litter trained. She goes to the door like a dog to go out. You know, I brought a litter box in, and she just sniffed it, and she doesn't seem to have any idea what it's for.
Oh, gosh. About how old is the cat? Is it adult or a kitten? Or
about 3 or 4 years old already, yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's tricky. When they start outside, they just become accustomed to going anywhere and everywhere they want to go. So there's a couple things you can do. That's great. That you say girl, she?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That's great that she's going to the door like she wants to go outside. I mean, that's great that she's showing some kind of signal of, hey, I need to go to the bathroom. And if you are having her indoor, outdoor, and you have a place where she can safely go, then great, you can let her go outside. But if you want her to get used to using the litter box inside, I recommend putting in as many litter boxes as you're comfortable. Ideally, at least one litter box per level of your home. If you have multiple cats, the ideal number is one litter box per cat plus one. So if you have three cats, I recommend four litter boxes. And there are certain things, some people swear by them. I've kind of heard it go either way. Cat attracts things you can put in the litter. They should naturally know where to go, but cats can be particular where you may need to try and play with the litter level. So try having one litter box be a little bit deeper, one be a little more shallow. Typically, an inch and a half a litter tends to be best. But then just like you would potty train a dog, anytime that she shows interest in the litter box, goes near the litter box, praise, you can give a treat. Let them know that that is what you're looking for. And I know this may sound a little gross, so I apologize. But if you do catch a spot where she does go to the bathroom, either she poos or she peeps somewhere, if you're able to move either a soaked paper towel with urine or some of the stool into the litter box, that'll be a really big help too. Oh, that's where this goes. And then she should start using that box.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. I was thinking about getting a layer of sod and placing it in the litter box, but that might be a bit much.
I mean, one of the big things that can help is putting it near where they want to go. And, you know, when it comes to litter box things, I feel like there's rarely a bad idea. If it works, it works.
Okay. Cindy, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Lynn in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm between cats, and I live in a town where they don't allow cats to roam free. And so that's part of why I'm reticent to get another one. I've had lots of cats over the years, and I just really like when they can be outside some. I think they're happier, and they're just nicer companions. That's been my experience. But I'm wondering if you have any ideas about whether it's possible to, or any experience of trying to territory train a cat, like the way you would with a dog in an invisible fence. We have a lot of deck area, and I fantasize about having a kitten that I could train to just stay on the decks or close to the house. So that's all.
Sure. That is always the dream, isn't it? Having a cat who will just kind of come and go as they please, that will stay safe and things like that. In my experience, I actually got my start working one-on-one with animals in various different humane societies. So I've just seen so many stray cats come and go that unfortunately, I do tend to lean more on the, you know, either keep them inside or have them outside in a safe, confined area, because just as you said, they do. They love being outside. It's a great place for them to sniff and get lots and lots of enrichment, and just they have a blast. So while I don't know of ways, unfortunately, to safely have them unconfined outside where you can guarantee that they'll be territorially trained to stay in your area, I do recommend for cats who really enjoy being outside. I have one cat who loves being outside and one that just absolutely hates it. but I picked up him up as a stray, so he may have a little PTSD there. But you can still let them have outside time and do it in a safe way, especially if there are laws in place where you're not allowed to have them be indoor-outdoor. Catios are wonderful. It's essentially just like a big pendant area where you can let your cat roam and be outside, but they're still confined. Or I harness train my cat, where I take him out on a harness, just like you would a dog. I've also trained my cat to go in a stroller, and we go on walks. And he gets lots and lots of outside time. But especially when you harness train, you can get as long of a leash as you want, but you know they're not going to run off. So there are some alternatives you can do to make sure your cat gets that outside time. Again, catios are some of my favorites, but that way you know you have that safety barrier of they're not going to run out into the street, or a coyote isn't going to come and run and pick them up, but they still get that those wonderful benefits that you mentioned of being outside.
Yeah. Lynn, thank you and good luck. Appreciate your call. Yeah, there was I was reading of in the neighborhood, in one of the Madison neighborhoods, where the cat was taken by a coyote. That's not a good thing to have happen, for sure. A listener,
no, it gets scary.
Yeah, a listener emailed us, why do cats lick each other rather lovingly before they go to battle and fight each other, especially at night before bed? And this kind of happens in my household, too, with the two cats I've got. They'll lick each other, and then pretty soon they're tearing through the house after each other.
Yeah, my cats, too. And that's, you know, typically if they're just grooming each other back and forth, that's a wonderful thing to see, where it can be very affectionate. It is a big source of bonding. And there is an important distinction to note if your cats then go into a fight, if it's like yowling, fur flying, where it's a dangerous situation, versus we're play fighting. They're fighting, they're pouncing, they're chasing back and forth. That's different. That's still bonding. But if it does go into something more truly aggressive, or when it's getting picked on with each other, it's kind of similar, and there's still a lot of research to be done here. So who knows, down the road, I may be proven wrong on this, but my current understanding of it is that it is kind of like what we talked about earlier about petting-induced aggression, where they can just get a little overstimulated, they can get a little overwhelmed, where it's, okay, stop touching me now. Or one may be trying to groom and is having a great time, and the other one is done, and then it can escalate. The area of the brain where they're having a great time, the area of the brain where they're fighting are fairly close. Those two emotions are fairly close, so they can flip-flop pretty quickly.
Nancy and Nina emailed us. Nancy's cat begs and whines constantly for treats. And I'm just as an aside, I bet she's feeding greenies as treats. She stands near the cabinet where her treats are, no matter where Nancy is in the house, and regardless of whether or not the food bowl is full. And I have a kind of a similar problem with Mr. Tiger at home, who loves his greenies.
Tiger is not alone. lots of cats. My cat Angus is just like that. It seems like he is just the bottomless pit. So first thing I recommend, you know, always make sure just at your annual vet visits that they're getting the proper nutrition that they need, because there are some cats who don't absorb all the nutrients they need. They need a little extra help to absorb those things. That is a bit rarer, though. But you also want to make sure that the food that you're feeding is high in protein and filling them up, and not just, I call it like the McDonald's of cat food, where you get to feed it all day. It's not going to completely fill you up, but you enjoy eating it. So make sure that your food is nutritionally well-balanced, but also it can be really helpful to have them work for their food. So I really enjoy having my cat Angus in particular play right before mealtime. So he goes through this little hunt sequence with his wand toy. He will chase his wand toy, he's burning some energy, and then he can have a snack. So it's sort of like he's hunting down a bird outside in his mind, and then he gets to eat his quote-unquote kill. He gets to enjoy the spoils of his hunt, and that tends to help to burn out their energy and to put that food to proper use, where then they naturally get tired, take a nap, and then they sleep for a good chunk of the day, and then it's mealtime again. So it helps use the energy a bit better, where it's not just, I'm sitting around and I'm hungry again. I mean, it's the same thing with people. If we're sitting around not burning the energy that we have, we might just are, am I hungry or am I bored? Am I hungry or am I thirsty? They can do the same thing.
What about just leaving food out for them all the time?
So one way, I know that is a really popular way of feeding cats. Unfortunately, it isn't the most helpful for them because, and I've fed my cats every which way you can think of over the years. I have done free feeding, just like you say, where you leave the food out, and my cat will still just sit by the bowl and wait for food, even though there's food in it. They want a little topper of fresh food. So what I recommend doing is, I feed my cats wet food twice a day. It's just the most biologically appropriate and the most filling for them. And it's how they get a good source of their hydration, which also helps keep them full longer. And then what I will do is I'll take dry food and I'll put it in a puzzle feeder throughout the day. So in a way, I am leaving food out for them, but they have to work for it. They have to use their brains and bat kibble out of a puzzle toy, or I'll even just do an empty egg carton, and they have to figure out how to scoop the kibble out of the egg carton. So that way they're still burning energy, they're still working for their food, and it lasts a lot longer, and it helps burn energy, and it does wonders for their mental health as well.
Dick in Oak Creek, do you have a quick question, Dick?
Yes, I do. A second question, if you would, please. We have a cat who likes to lick paper money.
Why is that?
Likes to lick what?
Paper money.
Paper money.
He loves to do that.
That is a new one for me. I'm not going to lie. I will always tell you if something's new for me. I have not experienced that before, although I will say one of my cats, I love reading a good paperback book in my big comfy chair, and my cat will come up and just start rubbing on it and not quite licking on it, but I imagine it's a texture thing is my guess.
I think you're right on that. Emily, would you come back and be with us again? We didn't get into the training of tricks.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Anytime.
Emily Ruiz and her business, she's owner and operator of Great and Small Animal Behavior and Training, works with cats and dogs in the Waukesha area. It's great. We'll get her back and we'll do this again. Thanks for joining in today. Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud, our producers, our technical director, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.